It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio. We've been talking a lot this morning, Ton, about drip irrigation. It's one of the focuses this hour. And we've had a couple texts asking about drip tape. Can you tell us about drip tape and
drip tape?
What is it and how would you use it?
Kind of like a roll of poly pipe, that if you've ever seen them in the rolls, but it's super thin and super flexible. It's used in row like onions is a really popular place to use it. And there's holes every so often that emit like 0.13 gallons per hour.
They're very small.
Very small. And so you have to run them for hours. But from what I see on the drip tape, if you know how to use it, it can work. But there's issues with it, too.
Now, the other thing about drip tape, it's usually really inexpensive. But it's also a disposable product. So it's usually one season and then it's done. It's a very thin wall. So it's not designed to last for long periods of time. It's usually also installed in conjunction with something like a plastic row cover, things like that. Machines that put it down. It needs that protection. It doesn't last long in sunlight, those kind of things. So it's drip with pre-installed emitters, but it's pretty flimsy stuff.
And it also doesn't work well unless your ground is very level. If you've got high and low spots, you're going to be in your low spots, you're going to be getting water, but everywhere, even an inch or two can make a difference with it. And so a lot of farm fields that use the drip tape, if I'm not mistaken, they're laser leveled before they're planted so that they have flat ground or just maybe a slight slope in one direction so that everything gets watered equally.
And I have a high tunnel and I bought a whole roll of this disposable drip tape, and I think it was like 1500 feet. It was going to last me years. But what I found is my pressure is too high. Even with a regulator, the pressure on this tubing has to be between 12 and 15 psi, and I can't drop it that low with my system. And so I was blowing the ends out. I was popping things all over the place. So yeah, it's got a place, but usually it's in an ag setting or row crop. So I would spend a little bit extra money and get the more hard,
the thicker wall, polyethylene.
Well, and it might even be worth the money if we're going down this road on the thicker walled inline drip. I would actually invest in pressure compensating inline drip, because if you have high and low spots, it doesn't matter.
So we've introduced a bunch of terms.
I was
going to
say, explain what that means.
So I want to go back before Tom does that. I wanted to back up, even talking about point source drip. And point source drip is basically where you have an emitter that emits, it's like one emitter that emits water in a very specific location. And then to get water in another location, you punch another hole in the pipe and put in another little emitter, or run a piece of tubing and then an emitter on that one. So you have these wet points in the ground, maybe at the base of a plant, and then you'll have substantial dry areas in between them. That's point source drip.
And the buttons that come for the point source are different colors, and the different colors determine how many gallons per hour.
Right. So typically anywhere from about a half a gallon an hour, 1 gallon, 2 gallons, and 4 gallons are the typical numbers.
I saw one yesterday that was 24 gallons an hour. Yeah. And I was like, at that point, just run the hose.
That's a sprinkler. Yeah.
Yeah, so the type of irrigation that you're going to use in your garden is different. It's called inline, and that's just a hose or a tube with the holes pre-drilled, so to speak, that are every 6 inches, every 8 inches, every foot, whatever it is. But in the drip world, there's a term called pressure compensating, and that is an emitter that if you have elevation differences or even pressure differences, as long as you're within the recommendation, say the 15 to 30 PSI, it will emit about a gallon per hour or a half gallon per hour with, so you don't have to worry about all the variables of too much or too little pressure or slight differences in elevation. And if I'm going to do inline, having been playing with drip this year, I'm going to spend the extra money and I'll probably have to order it online to do pressure compensating inline drip for my garden.
Yeah. And it's quite a bit more expensive for pressure.
Well, and when this all relative though, but when you talk more expensive, how much was your 1500 feet of drip tape?
Oh, it was like $50.
So it's, but even the tube, this little thicker, isn't that expensive. I bought 150 feet, I think, for under $25.
Yeah, and they usually come in 100 foot rolls. Yeah. And they're what, $60-$70.
Yeah.
I've got a line that runs literally 150 feet. And with these pressure compensating regulating holes, my plant at the front of the line closest to the valve gets the same amount as the 150 feet away.
So the way these work, just for the listener, is that
for the viewers, yes.
When the pressure is high, this is the teacher coming out of me. When the pressure is high, the opening, there's a little flapper that's built into these little plastic devices that cause the dripping. When the pressure is high, it actually pushes those little plastic flappers closed a little bit more. And where the pressure is lower, they're a little bit more relaxed, and so they let more water through. And so this is why when there's variations in elevation, hilliness, or longer runs, you can get water more evenly distributed throughout the tube. So it does cost more for those. They tend to plug up, I think, overall a little bit less because that flap adjusts a little bit and it can let particulates through. You can also get point source drippers or the buttons that are –
Pressure regulating.
And you can even get pressure regulating ones that you can take apart and clean if they get.
A lot of them will advertise that they are self-cleaning. So.
Yeah, and that means that the pressure compensating part actually flutters when the water's going through it, and that helps to break up pieces or allow larger pieces through.
Man, sometimes I listen. Just with three of us here, you can kind of sit and listen instead of worry about what you're going to say.
Yeah. Like, man.
You guys are nerds.
Yeah, we are geeks.
Well, here's a drip question, right? That's something we haven't covered. Do you recommend soaker hose?
That's exactly what I was about to ask.
Using soaker hose under my plastic. And I love this stuff because I'll run my tomatoes and I can run a soaker hose. And yeah, the top end gets more water than the bottom, but everything gets irrigated sufficiently. But the thing you've got to be careful, in my garden, I can run my soaker hose twice a week for 20 minutes and have that water soak in pretty deeply. And so soaker hoses are potentially not nearly as efficient as drip tape or these inline drip emitters. But if you know to turn them off, they're great.
Yeah, that was my first foray into the whole drip world was using these soaker hoses, which are usually made out of recycled tires. And they kind of leak indiscriminately along the length of the line. So it's a little bit harder to gauge how much water they're using. But my big complaint with them, I actually really liked them. My big complaint with them is I got 1 year before they had sun rotted to the point at which they basically just became something that
I put mine under plastic and then I'll put them in a shed. And if I'm careful, I'll get 3 or 4 years out of one, but they eventually still get brittle. The other thing I don't like about them, because they're made out of the recycled rubbers, they're not very durable. And any nick with a shovel or even sometimes twisting them, kids folding them in half and they can split. But if you're careful with them, I really like them. And if you're getting into drip, they're a good first step because it's just hook the hose up, run them for 20-30 minutes and walk away.
I want to come back to something Mike said earlier, and we focus a lot, because you're nerds, about the delivery system, but plants really don't care. They just want the water.
Right. The reason that we would switch to drip over spray is just that we lose less water to evaporation. The plant doesn't care. I mean, yeah, we can argue foliar diseases and things like that, but I mean, in Utah, even with overhead sprinklers, we don't have very many foliar diseases.
Foliar diseases, I know it's a management issue.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so, and the other advantage is, right, you're not watering. You don't have to water as wide an area.
Exactly. It's more targeted. But from what I said earlier about, like, if you're going to have woody plants especially, trees and shrubs in an area where you want to use drip, point source drip, and this is what JD said during the break, point source drip will work okay for getting them established, getting them through the first year, getting the roots starting to move out into the new soil. After that, you have to start installing so many drippers that you probably just go to a grid system where you're spacing a line out, you know, every foot or so, because the roots on these plants will spread vast distances, and you're not going to hit all that very well with point source drip. I've gotten so many calls this year already from people.
I like for perennials and annuals.
Yeah, perennials is great, yeah.
But for shrubs and trees, small shrubs maybe, but once you get past, say, a little 2 by 2 foot barberry or something that's just not going to get that big, once you can start to get 2 or 3 feet tall on anything, whether it's perennial or shrub, you need to go to inline.
Yeah, I've just had so many calls and emails. What's wrong with my tree? I have one dripper right at the base. I'm like, well, install like 15 more drippers in a circle pattern around the base of the tree and then keep expanding that every year.
I was going to say, not only that, but I have a picture of a tree in a commercial setting that has 10 drip buttons around the trunk, and it's like, you're not.
Yeah, well, where's all the roots that are out in the landscape, right? Right.
Well, and as much as I enjoy geeking out about drip irrigation.
Not as much as we do.
We are going to take a break here, and we're going to come back and answer a few texts on the other side of this. And we'll come back with our final segment of the Greenhouse Show on KSL in just a moment.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent. It was senseless, and I will never understand it. I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the final segment of the Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio. Tom, it's been so much fun to be here with you. We always say this show flies by. It's gone so much faster today. It's been so great having Mike and JD here.
Yeah, we've been hitting pretty deep on drip. And so for people not interested, we'll talk about other topics too. But I feel like that it's very important we start to have these conversations, because we're going to be need to be doing anything we can.
It has
to
go
water.
This direction, but we have to do it correctly.
We do.
Otherwise, we lose the advantage.
Well, we're not gaining any benefit to going with drip except for draining the pocketbook, which is not an advantage.
Yeah, that's not good. Okay, let's take some text questions and get them answered here, Ton. I've got one here that says, "What are the pros and cons of overseeding lawns with clover?" And this is somebody that lives in American Fork.
Do either of you want?
I have an opinion.
I don't mind lawns with clover, except for if you're allergic to bees.
I was going to say, I have a really high allergy to bee stings. Like, I go into anaphylactic shock, so I don't want clover. And, you know, I think this is another one of those social media campaigns that just floats around, the micro clovers and all these more resistant ground cover type plants.
I thought you were going to say morons.
No.
So as far as a lawn replacement plant, sure. You know, it has some application there. It has some validity there. Is it going to behave like grass? Is it going to be managed the same way as grass? No, it's going to be a different learning curve, and it's not necessarily going to be this golden child of landscape plants.
Well, and the thing with the clover, if you're using clovers as a lawn, I think that it can go longer and stay green, but long-term drought tolerance, say over months, that clover is going to die, to where your turf, as long as it's got the nutrients it needs, the roots stay alive and the crowns do, and they'll sit there with as little as 1 inch of water a month and regenerate as soon as it starts to get water again, to where if you did that to clover, you would kill it.
Yeah, clover dies, lawn grasses go dormant.
So it depends on your management. So mixing it with lawn, I think it's fine as long as nobody's allergic. But the problem you run into is if you don't fertilize a couple times a year, the clover will take over your lawn. And so every time I see a lawn full of clover, it's because of a lack of fertilization, and the clover produces its own nitrogen and kind of takes over.
Well, the hard part is in the 60s and 70s, clover was a mix with grass. They put it in there as a nitrogen
mixer. Yeah, it was
always
there, yeah.
Now people don't like broadleaf things in their grass.
I've never really understood the advantages of having clover in your lawn, and it's never been tempting for me. But a question that just raised in my mind from you guys, if that does draw in the bees and you've got a vegetable garden nearby, then maybe that helps you out with your garden as well.
Sure, and if you want to be more pollinator friendly and those kinds of things, certainly there's lots of different angles at which to look at something like clover as an additional.
What I worry though is that with this drought talk and everything's become very hot topic, and in horticulture these things ebb and flow all the time. We always get these newfangled fads going on. If you want to do clover, be committed, do it and keep it. But what I worry is people are going to convert their lawns into clover thinking it's the save all of water, and then in 2 years they're going to replant new lawns because they get frustrated with it.
And then where's the savings?
There's no savings.
All right. Great talk. We've got just a few minutes left, and I want to get one last call in. Brian is calling in from Syracuse. Good morning, Brian. How are you today?
Good. How are you doing? Appreciate the talk on the drip line. Wish there's even more of that in the future. My call is about trumpet vine. I made the mistake of putting trumpet vine in, and I'm wondering if there's a way to control all the various offshoots that they're all over the place and very far distances from the trumpet vine without taking the entire plant out.
So you're trying to figure out how to repent of your sins, and it's determined it to be difficult.
Now you're at the confession booth.
Yes.
Yes.
So we should advertise this as like the horticultural confession line. No, I'm just kidding.
Sometimes it's marriage therapy. Sometimes,
yes. So sure, are the suckers coming from seed, or are they just coming up around the base, or what's going on?
They're coming from extended roots rooting out. They're not seeds. I can actually pull them up and trace along the line, the roots going back the direction. But I mean, they're as far as 25 feet away.
Well, I initially clipping them and using a product called Sucker Stopper, or one of its competitors, will help slow it down, at least sitting them up. But Mike, I cut you off. What did you?
I was just going to say, unfortunately, as the plant has a genetic tendency to do this, and this is in similar vein as aspen, there's nothing that you can really put on chemical wise besides this hormone treatment like roots or Sucker Stop that won't translocate potentially into the rest of the plant and cause more widespread damage to it. So it's just physical removal of those shoots, and then trying these hormone treatments.
Okay, Brian, that help you out?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
All right, you have a great day. Thanks for your call. We just got a minute or so left here. Tom, why don't you grab a text so we can maybe help somebody out?
All right. I'm watering less but seeing fungus in the lawn. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Yeah.
So my question is are they actually seeing fungus?
Well, I see a lot of necrotic ring spot in the summer patch, but the problem shows up, the symptom shows up during the heat. But the problem occurred way before when you saw the symptom. And that's true with insects or diseases. So even though you're watering less, what's happening, if you read the fact sheet on necrotic ring spot, it says to irrigate more frequently because the drought stress makes the symptomology a lot more present.
Yeah, you irrigate less time but more frequently and just try and keep that top layer of soil a little bit more moist.
So with those fungal diseases, just overseed with a perennial rye or more resistant lawn. And again, you don't want to do that in 90-degree heat, so wait until September and reseed with a resistant blend and mask what's going on.
And we're assuming that she's not talking about mushrooms, fairy ring or something like that, which is completely different.
All right. Well, I got to tell you, this has been so much fun. I've never had the chance to sit in with you guys on the show before, and this has been a great time. And the information's been fantastic. We geeked out on tomatoes and drip irrigation, and I'd love to have you guys come back Can we do that again sometime?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Yeah, thank Mike from coming up from Saratoga and JD coming out of the Cache Valley. It's an undertaking to come in sometimes on a Saturday morning, so thanks.
Let's do this again. It's been fun to sit in for Maria today, but she'll be back next week. It's been good to be here with you guys, and thanks for joining us today on The Greenhouse Show, and we will see you next week.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.